Hey friends, welcome back to another Seed Talk with Lisa and Lane. And folks, if you are just listening to this on your favorite podcast app, I highly recommend you hop on over to YouTube to our channel, because Lane and I kind of have a little different look today, and we're super stoked to talk about our subject. And, you know, we invite you to come on over and have a look-see. Hey, Lane. Yes.
Hello, I like your sunflower glasses.
Yeah, and Lane has tentacles. Pretty cute, pretty cute.
Antenna.
Yeah. Antenna. All right, Lane, so let us know, what is the topic of discussion today?
Well, whenever I pull out my antenna headband, you know we're going to talk about something to do with bugs. And today we're going to talk about a bug. It has the word fun in its name, but it's really not that fun, is it, Lisa?
No, it is not fun at all. And in fact, I think it might be one of the most annoying insects in the world, if you ask me.
I know. So today we're going to be talking about fungus gnats. So we're just going to take a look at their life cycle to help us understand that a little more, and then how we can try to maybe prevent an infestation or help treat something that you might have going on.
That's a great topic. I think this time of the year, so many folks are faced with it. And you know, it's not just seed starting people.
No.
Folks that have houseplants face this challenge, and it's basically the same treatment no matter what type of plant you have that's living indoors in soil. I'm anxious to talk about it. Let's hit it.
Yeah. And I have to say, we're going to mostly be looking at images of fungus gnats on sticky traps. And it was actually funny because I forgot, Lisa, that I had asked you to send these pictures over. And last Saturday, you texted me a bunch of pictures and I was like, ooh, maybe something's blooming. And I opened them and it was all these gross fungus gnat
dead
pictures.
Bugs.
Exactly. I'm like, oh, I did ask for this. So. Okay, so Lisa, can you just describe what a fungus gnat looks like, or how you kind of know you might have some around?
Sure. So, I mean, to the naked eye, they just look like a little tiny fly flying around, normally indoors, you know, near maybe where your transplant or your seed starting station is, or as I mentioned earlier, maybe you have an area where you keep houseplants. And then sometimes when you get that infestation, you'll even see them maybe in your kitchen if you have fruits and vegetables sitting out on your counter. So that's the sign that you've waited too long, kind of like you've lost a little battle already, and it's time to really get serious about taking care of fungus gnats. Because when you see them flying around, that's time to really get busy doing something.
Yeah. So they're these teeny tiny little flies. They're much, much smaller than your typical house fly. And yes, that's when they're in their adult form. When they're in the larval stage, they actually look like tiny little translucent or white worms. If you have house plants and you have a problem and you dig down, you might unfortunately see some of these little guys wriggling around. And also, if you want to know if you have a problem, like let's say on a house plant, you suspect there are larvae in there, you can put a thin slice of potato on top of that soil and leave it for a few days. And then if you come back and turn that potato slice over in a few days, you might see a bunch of little larvae on the backside.
Ooh.
Yes, I know. That's something I'm not going to be doing, but that is a way you could try to trap some and then remove them. All right, so now I wanted to just talk about their life cycle and their lifespan just a little bit. And I just want to say that when I was looking up these numbers, I saw slight variations depending on the source that I was drawing from. So I'm going with some numbers that were from an NC State Extension article just to give us an idea of the life cycle. So first of all, the eggs hatch in around 4 to 6 days. Then the larvae feed for around 2 weeks, 12 to 14 days. Then they enter their pupal stage for 5 to 6 days, and then the adults emerge and live for around a week or so. So basically, in summary, they complete their entire life cycle in around 4 weeks, and there's about a 3-week time period from the time the egg is laid to the time they emerge as adults. And I also just wanted to say that temperature and environmental factors can affect how quickly they actually complete that life cycle and how fast you get that next generation of gnats.
And, you know, explains a lot, right? I mean, understanding the life cycle of any pest or even a beneficial insect that you're trying to encourage. It's just really, really helpful to know that. And once, in my experience, once that life cycle starts to happen, you know, you've got fungus gnats, you just continually have fungus gnats hatching and
Yes.
jetting off and, you know, just flying around your grow area. And it quickly gets out of control.
Yeah. And like you said, you might have multiple stages of gnats at the same time. So you might have some adults, some are larvae, some are in that pupal stage. And the hotter it is, the more quickly they actually move through that life cycle, by the way. Although
Yeah,
I think,
great.
yeah, exactly. And sometimes I do think it can seem like it's worse in the wintertime, especially for people that have house plants, because those plants aren't using up as much water in the cooler temperature. And we're going to learn that fungus gnats really enjoy moist soil conditions. So sometimes it can seem like in the winter, they might be a little worse. It might just be because your plants aren't drying out quite as quickly.
You know, Lane, one of the most common challenges that I see people face with seed starting is it doesn't matter what method of seed starting you're using, soil blocks or plug trays, is overwatering is a very common problem. And that fuels this problem, right? It just makes it, I mean, you're already struggling because you're overwatering your plants, right? So they're not thriving. And then you get bugs flying around and you're ready to like close up shop.
Exactly. Is there a time of year in your grow room, Lisa, where it seems to be worse? Do you notice it's worse during the summer months or worse during the winter months?
Well, we typically take preventative steps to never have those outbreaks anymore. But back before we figured all that out, where I was basically just using sticky traps, that's all I knew about, to capture just the adults. I mean, that's like a lot is happening before they get to that stage. I will definitely say in the heat of the summer is, I mean, July and August is what comes to mind when we are just have so many transplants and it's hot in our grow room. And yeah, there was definitely the height of their season.
Yeah. And it makes sense now that we know with that life cycle that they do move quicker through that when it's warmer.
Right.
Okay. So now I wanted to talk about what they eat at various stages of their life cycle. So the adults, they're just more of a nuisance. They're not really eating much. They're not doing much damage. They mostly just drink water or they might drink some flower nectar, but they do, of course, lay eggs in soil, which is the main downfall of those. Yeah, right. Of the adults. And the larvae are the ones that can do the most damage. So they live in the soil. They eat, big surprise, fungi. They love to eat fungi and other organic matter. And they can also feed on things like plant roots. So if you have a really large population of larvae in your soil, they could end up damaging your seedlings. But for most people, it's just more of a nuisance. It's not as much damage that you'll see. Have you ever noticed actual damage on seedlings that you suspect was from fungus gnat larvae?
You know, that's really good to know because I frankly don't think I have ever had fungus gnat damage. I think that sometimes when people think that they have fungus gnat damage, it is in fact a result of the overwatering that encouraged the fungus gnats. You know, that I mean, that's the what's the culprit is. It's just a case of misdiagnosis, right? So yeah, I have not experienced firsthand any what I thought was truly fungus gnat damage.
I have not either. And I do think it's like you said, it's most likely a misdiagnosis because you probably would have to have a pretty hefty population to see that actual damage, but it is possible. They can eat roots. So it's just something to be aware of. Okay, now we're going to talk about where they like to lay their eggs and how many eggs each gnat can lay. So this is the scary part. So each female fungus gnat can lay hundreds of eggs. So I saw references to them laying anywhere from 100 to 300 eggs per female fungus gnat. And you can see just with that number how quickly your population can explode and get out of hand if you don't take steps to prevent or remedy a situation if you have it. And like we've already alluded to, guess where they like to lay their eggs? They love to lay their eggs in moist soil. So there was a Cornell University study, and they found almost twice as many fungus gnats in soil with 90% moisture content than soil at 30% moisture content. So the adults love laying eggs in that environment, and the larvae really thrive in those wet conditions. And they also love soil and media that has compost and other microbially active components, which is exactly the way we like to start our seeds, Lisa. That describes our blocking mix perfectly.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah.
Exactly.
So anyways, just like Lisa was saying, overly moist soil, whether it's your house plants or your seedlings, usually most plants don't tend to like that anyways. We know our seedlings, it's not good for them to be perpetually overwatering, but that also, side note, creates the perfect environment for these fungus gnats to want to go in there and lay their eggs.
Yeah, that it just, it's like, it's all comes clear, right? When you hear the facts of why they're there, what keeps them there, and then how much they reproduce. Yikes.
Yeah, it's really scary. So the first preventative measure is, like you mentioned, Lisa, just avoiding overwatering and allowing the soil to dry out between waterings.
Yeah.
And then another thing is just making sure to store your soil so that gnats can't access it. You know, if you have a bag of soil and it has a bunch of holes in it and it's in a garage where maybe gnats are coming in and out, they can lay eggs in that soil, and then you could end up taking it inside and just accidentally bringing some in.
Yeah, you know, that whole cross-contamination from ways you never dreamed of. I just have to say this now. I had a student, we would do lives for my students inside my grow room oftentimes. And this was years ago, and I was having a fungus gnat outbreak. I was currently only using the sticky traps. I wasn't treating the soil, didn't really have access to anything that I was aware of. And I just really couldn't figure out where they had come from. And we discovered that there's a big drain in the floor of my grow room, which quickly gets soil trapped in it down under the cover. And sure enough, there was about 3 inches of moist soil down there, which just really proved, while treating that outbreak and I could never get it resolved, that's where they were coming from. So that's why I say that, to say to people, if you're seed starting indoors and you have houseplants, you have got to address them also, right?
Oh, yes, that's really important. Okay, so now I want to move on to some remedies. And in order to get a handle on the situation, to effectively prevent an outbreak or to try to treat if you have something bad going on, it's really important to treat the different stages of their life cycle. So you need to find a way to take care of the adults and the larvae. And remember that they might be present in multiple stages at any given time. So the first thing I want to talk about is for the adults. And before we even talk about remedies, Lisa, we should say that everything we're going to talk about, you go ahead and do this at the farm in advance, even yes. if you have no problem. This is just your standard protocol we're going to talk about.
Right. It's standard operating procedure. When we put our first soil blocks in the room in January, we start doing the steps that we're going to talk about.
And there are lots of other remedies out there. We're just going to talk about the ones that have been kind of tried and true over the years.
Yes.
So for the adults, one thing that is a great option to use, and this is for not only controlling some of the adults, but also monitoring them.
Yes.
And it's these yellow sticky traps. Can you talk about those, Lisa?
Sure. So the yellow is just like a little flashing light to many flying insects, and it attracts them. We would never use these outdoors, right? You only use them indoors in a controlled environment. You don't want to get something on there that you don't want to get on there, like, you know, a butterfly or a bird. And it is it's actually created as a monitoring tool to see what's going
right.
on in your grow space. I mean, you can look and see how they are marked with squares. I mean, there's, you know, recommendations like if you have 3 per square, this is, you know, you don't really have a big problem yet. Or if you have 10 per square, then you better hop to it, you know. So in greenhouses is where they really use a lot of that and have a protocol to follow. But this tells me that what our level of infestation is when we have it. And I leave sticky traps, clean sticky traps up. When we close down our grow room in November, usually I throw away the old stickies that have bugs on them and put up new ones so I can kind of catch anybody that might be lingering in there. So when we start in January, we have a clean room.
Yeah, that's a great idea. And how many of these traps do you typically have out in relation to your grow rack shelves?
Oh, that's a good question. I put one on each shelf because you need to catch them as they're flying around. You know, they're not going to seek out the sticky trap. They just kind of happen on it. And these wooden blocks that Lane has in this image, those actually were farmers market sign holders. We used to use little miniature blackboards, and my dad made these and made grooves. Well, when we stopped going to markets, I thought, oh my goodness, that's kind of a perfect remedy to use for our sticky traps, but I use them in other ways too. So this is one way of having it more upright. So if they're flying, it can catch them. But I also lay them flat on the tray and they'll just land on it. So there are several options. You just want to do it so that you don't get it on your fingers.
Right. They are sticky, sticky
They are
traps.
sticky. That's the point.
And some people do like to use vinegar traps in lieu of sticky traps. That's just something you can look into if you want another option.
Right.
Okay, so now we're going to move on to treating the larvae, which again, those are the ones that really can do the most damage. And there are two different products we're going to talk about. They both operate via the same mechanism. So it's a treatment called BT, which stands for Bacillus thuringiensis. And it's a selective biological larvicide. So it only targets those larvae. And the first one we're going to talk about is called Natrol. This is something that's easy to use. It's a little difficult to get your hands on some because you have to purchase a lot of times in a quite a large quantity.
Right. 5 gallon buckets, I think.
So how would you go about using Natrol, Lisa?
So the real big benefit of Natrol is it's powder. So it dissolves instantly. And I mean, you literally just measure it out into your watering can. I would do that on Wednesdays and you use it. And it works really, really well. It's just the drawback that it's only available. The smallest quantity available is a 5 gallon drum, which is hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
Okay, so another option that's a bit more accessible is called mosquito bits. And again, it's another BT treatment. How do you implement this into your seed starting routine, Lisa?
Sure. So it's the same ingredient as Natrol, just in a very different form. It's in these little bits that looks like little miniature pea gravel, right? And so I
Right.
do the same thing. I follow the instructions, and it's actually labeled for fungus gnats as well as mosquitoes. And so you'd measure it out. And I like to put the bits in my watering can the evening before, I'm like Tuesday evening, or actually Tuesday morning after I finish my watering chores. I fill the watering can up and put the bits in it and let them sit overnight. And they don't break completely down. There'll be some floating, I just pour it into my tray and go on about my business. It's just an organic matter. But that works really, really well.
Right. So you don't bother straining them out or anything. You just kind of pour them into your trays.
And I only do it once a week. And sometimes I try to be a little bit more deliberate. If there's a big clump of the bits floating on top, I'll try to scoop it out. But in general, I have not found it to be detrimental, to just because we're always in a hurry around here, right? We're looking for less steps, not more steps. And it works really fine to I just pour it out of my watering can and a few bits get on a tray. That's okay.
And you can follow the instructions if you have a packet of either of these, because you might need to apply more frequently initially if you're having an actual infestation, or there might even be a different rate of application that you could follow if you're having a serious problem.
Yeah.
So we had the sticky traps, that was kind of monitoring and helping to control the adults a little, and then this treats the larvae. So by using both of these in your system, it really helps to fight those fungus gnats and prevent something really bad from taking over your seed starting area.
And Lane, I just can't emphasize enough that implementing this as part of your seed starting process, you go to make your first blocks, you better be sure you have your larvicide on hand and sticky traps. Sticky traps are already installed, right? Because I had them in there since November. But you just don't want an outbreak. Because once you have an outbreak, it is just so incredibly annoying. And it is all 100% preventable by
Right.
just preventing it from happening.
And something else I wanted to mention too is when we were talking about the life cycle earlier, I mentioned that from the time an egg is laid to the time that the fungus gnat emerges as an adult, it's about 3 weeks. Obviously, that could be faster or slower depending on the temperatures and conditions, like I mentioned. But something I always just try to be mindful of is getting my seedlings moved out of the house as quickly as I can. So most of the things we grow in soil blocks, for me, they take about 4 weeks from seed to transplant for most things. Obviously, some things take longer. So around the 3 week mark, they're usually getting moved outside to be hardened off anyways. And actually, I like to move them out even earlier than that, especially in the warmer months when, again, that's also when those gnats tend to be moving through their life cycle faster.
Right.
And I just really try to be mindful that I don't like leaving things in my growing space for too long. And that alone just reduces the likelihood of having new adults emerge indoors. So, you know, even if I sowed my seeds
right.
on that first day an egg was laid, if that tray is out of the house in 2.5 weeks, there's just less of a chance that an adult is going to be able to emerge indoors in that amount of time.
Yeah. And once we move them outside, right, we stop the larvicide. I mean, we just don't find that necessary. So it's only in the grow room. And that's just another reason that I love soil blocking, is that the plants grow so much quicker that it's, I mean, if you were growing in plug trays and you're going the normal 6 to 8 weeks, that just really ramps up the opportunity to have more fungus gnat issues.
Right. That's a really good point. All right. Well, that was it for this fungus gnat episode. Hope that gave you all some tips for helping to prevent an outbreak in your own growing space. Lisa's putting her glasses on again. But thank you so much for joining us, everyone. Be sure to share Seed Talk with a friend if you're enjoying it. And we always appreciate your ratings and reviews in a podcast app and your likes and comments over on YouTube. And just thank you so much for being here with us again.
And so just to say that my sunglasses, my sunflower sunglasses, were a gift from one of my sweet followers named Jennifer. And she sends me the most amazing packages every year. And I knew that I would make excellent use of these sunflowers. So friends, we're so glad you joined us here today. And remember that this broadcast is brought to you by thegardenersworkshop.com, where you will find like all things growing flowers and even a few vegetables. So we'd love to see you fall in over headfirst at thegardenersworkshop.com. Until we meet again, friends, ciao. Bye, Lane.
Bye.